Witches, rise up, return to your power. Witches, rise up, now is the hour. Witches, rise up, step up to your throne. Witches, rise up, it's time to come home. Witches, rise up, return to your power. Witches, rise up, now is the hour. Witches, rise up, step up to your throne. Witches, rise up, it's time to come home. We are the witches, we have returned. 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 The age of witches here now. 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 Witches, rise up, return to your power. Witches, rise up, now is the hour. Witches, rise up, step up to your throne. Witches, rise up, it's time to come home. Witches, rise up, return to your power. Witches, rise up, now is the hour. Witches, rise up, step up to your throne. Witches, rise up, it's time to come home. Welcome everyone to Witches Rise Up Global Online Summit, calling you, witch, to rise up and return to your power, because the age of witch is here. And I'm your host, Emer Stassen, and I'm really delighted to welcome today's expert speaker, Dr. Tarja Ward. Hi, Tarja.
Hi, Emer. It's so good to be with you. I'm really excited to talk to you again.
Me too. You're like my witchy sister out west across the wild Atlantic Ocean.
I totally feel that with you. Yes.
Gorgeous. Well, I'll read a small bit about you. Tarja Ward, PhD, lives in Asheville, North Carolina, where she has a private practice offering dream analysis, psychological and spiritual guidance to clients from all parts of the world. Tarja has worked intensively with her own and other people's dreams for more than 45 years, and for nearly 30 years has been an avid student of Indigenous ways of knowing and being. Tarja has conducted a monthly global community dream symposium since early 2017, wherein persons from all over the world come to share their dreams and listen to the collective dreaming mind. It's beautiful. Tarja conducts retreats and vision quests, teaches online courses, and teaches to a wide audience in regular interviews and lectures. She offers private oracular readings upon request. Wow. And your title today that we're going to be diving into is To Rise, We Must Fall, Bravely, Courageously Fall. So where would you like to start with that, diving into that beautiful topic?
Well, you know, this topic has been with me for the last while. I just keep thinking about what Carl Jung called the spirit of the depths. And his work was very much about finding that depth place. The psychology that he and Freud began is called depth psychology, for one thing. But his experience, his tremendous experiences in writing the Red Book and in other parts of his work and teaching, had a lot to do with going into the deep, deep depths of soul and of the spirit of the earth and of our own nature. And when I think about it, I think of the depths, not necessarily in terms of down, but in terms of in, in terms of like in every atom and cell in our being, there are these depths, there's all that space. And so the depths are going into that deep space that we are made of and that the earth is made of, and allowing ourselves to let go of some of the constructs that we live in our conscious, rational thinking mind and world, and allow ourselves to enter into that deep space of unknowing, unthinking, unraveling, unbeing, and having the courage to fall into those spaces and let go of the constructs of who we think we are and what we think the world is, because in some sense, all of that is an illusion. And as the physicist David Bohm talks about quite a bit, is that it's all constructed by thought. And thought is not what we think it is. Thought is a construct. It is something that's in our matter, in the sort of physical, natural world, that whatever we think, we create, we become. So this world is constructed by thought. If we change our thought, we change the world. The self is constructed by thought. If we change our perception of self, we can change ourselves. So it's about understanding the nature of thought and being willing to deconstruct thought itself. Because in those spaces, thought doesn't exist. And I have to tell you, Emer, this is a really cute thing. I just can't resist. My grandson, he's 6, picked him up from school yesterday. And he said to me, he's this thoughtful little boy. And so out of the sort of silence of our drive home, he says, "Do you know why it's silent in space?" And I said, "I do not. Why is it silent in space?" He said, "Because there is no air in space." And I said, "There has to be air for sound to happen." He said, "Yes. The molecules of air vibrate to sound vibration. And without air, there's no sound." But, okay, this little 6-year-old boy is even meditating on the silence, you know, and space. Isn't that just amazing?
That is so amazing, and a lesson for me and people here, I'm sure.
I couldn't have told you why there's no sound in space. I don't even know if I could have told you there is no sound in space. But, you know, he's really thinking about these things. And, you know, and it makes me somehow appreciate that there's a collective sort of mind or consciousness, as Jung calls it, because I feel like the world is now reaching for some of this. You know, they've gone into space and these sort of recent events that's kind of controversial for some, but, you know, we're thinking about space, and here's this little guy. It's just like it's coming into his brain right now, and he's talking about it, and so I'm talking about it here too. And I feel like it's something, it's a calling that we have right now. So I want to share with your audience some images that I've been working with, and these started coming to me as I've been sort of meditating and being with the sense of the spirit of the depths. And so I visited not too long ago the 9/11 memorial in the middle of Manhattan. So I think probably every listener has heard of the event in the United States on 9/11, September 11th of 2001. Where the World Trade Center towers were brought down by terrorist events. And so this is the memorial that has been built. And you can see around the edges there that the people. So you can kind of get a sense of the scale of this thing. It's massive. And this is where the one of the towers was. And I wish you could see it. I wish there was a little video I could have shown you, but as you're looking down into this space, all this water is flowing into that deep, dark hole. And they've created it so you see no light in there, you see no bottom to that. And I just, it's so interesting. I was just like captivated and fascinated by this idea of this water flowing into the depths like that, and this image in the center, and this being the somehow the monument that even maybe the great unconscious, like of the designers, decided we're going to put the spirit of the depths in this place. You know, when the towers come down, and in this case, I'm thinking the tower of our own ego self, the tower of our own cultural consensual reality. You know, when these towers come down, you know, this beautiful thing of the energy flowing into the depths like that, it is powerful to see that. And as I've been thinking about this, for some reason, this image just kept coming to my mind. The fact that it looks like that, and the fact that it was built in reference to this event of the deconstruction and the demolition of a certain kind of reality that is being threatened now. And certainly the honoring of the pain. So if you want to move it, I just gave you about 3 slides so we could just look at it in different ways. But as you're standing there, you can see that it just goes, you know, these waters just flow into that dark space that I find so rich and evocative. So there's all the world around it and all the colors of nature around it. And the names that you can see on the side of all the people that died on that day are memorialized in that beautiful monument there. I just think it's extraordinary what they've done. And then you can show the one more. So there you are in the middle of our constructed world, you know, our completely created by thought world. There is that monument that takes the energy down into the great depths. So I just wanted to offer this image as it has been really sort of speaking to me, and see if it also enters the imagination of all of us together.
Wow, that's so amazing. I hadn't seen that memorial, and I was sharing with you over email. The last time I was in New York was the November after the atrocity. So it was all cordoned off. It was still smoking, rising from this area.
I can't imagine being there so soon after. You must have just felt the raw devastation of our psyche. Yeah.
Heartbreaking. My sister lived in New York and worked for 3 years. So I was on the phone to her actually when it happened. And she was working in New Jersey over the water at the time. And she's like, I've got to go. Something's happened. And yeah, we didn't hear from her for a good 24 hours afterwards.
Oh my God, you must have been terrified.
Yeah, I knew she was okay, you know, but it's just
good. Okay.
Everything went down.
Good. You know?
So, yeah.
I mean, it's an iconic event for lots of reasons, you know, and everybody has their own sort of story or reason around it. But I just feel like in terms of the imagination for our collective species, it's like time for rethinking and reimagining. And I love what they've done with that space, you know, just kept it like that and created that depth.
It's so simple and so deep and powerful, isn't it? And that water flowing in to the depths.
Yeah.
As he shared.
I love that they didn't just rebuild old towers, you know. I really respect the designers and those who thought this through and created that memorial, because I think even in the unconscious, when you go there, something happens. So I really appreciate and value that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I wanted to ask you that. There's so much I want to ask you.
Please go ahead.
And I'm sure the audience are like, yeah, ask this. you know, you talk of the spirit of the depths, the spirit of the earth, and you talk about the depth isn't necessarily going down, it's going in. And I just absolutely love that, mm-hmm. how you describe that. And then our thought construct and changing our thought constructs. And then you talk about when our towers come down, our ego, the dismantling. There's so much richness in there. But I wanted to ask, firstly, when we do go in so courageously and bravely and fall inwards into the depths, mm-hmm. then what happens when we do that? What happens in the depths? I know that's a big question.
Well, you know, for many, and so I would probably say it's to be expected, there'll be a lot of anxiety. It's, you know, it's so unfamiliar because we live in this daylight construct of a world. You know, I think earlier peoples had, you know, had more connection to the spirit of the depths. The early peoples did, and they would have rituals and rites where they would honor that dimension of the reality that we inhabit. But I think that we've let go of that a lot since, I don't know, a couple thousand, 5,000 years, something like that. We've kind of let go of that connection. So I think to go in is to deconstruct, you know, our idea of what the self is. And I would say, Emer, you know, for us to like open ourselves willingly and consciously, but often it's going to be very likely an event we didn't invite and we didn't want, and we wouldn't imagine that we could survive, and we would never wish on anyone. Often it's going to be something like that. It's going to be some kind of crisis that is going to just like shatter the construct there. And sometimes that's just an efficient way that psyche and nature work. In my particular case, it was an event that ended my marriage that I never wanted to end, you know, the family, the way I'd known it, you know, that I never wanted to end. So in my particular case, it was that shattered my consciousness, just, and also the resignation from the ministry that I had, you know, so all my concepts of God and of my role in this world and all of that had been shattered before this event in the marriage. So it was like at all levels, I was just taken down. And for a long time, you know, it was one of those kind of processes where I lost about 50 pounds in, it seemed like 2 weeks, just all of a sudden skin and bones, and couldn't think and had no idea kind of who I was or what. It was just, it went on for a long time. And you know, I had a lot of help psychologically and spiritually to get through it. But sometimes it's an event like that. And in some sense, because I felt like I had said yes somewhere along the way to something deeper, something in the spirit of the depths that I felt calling to me, and somewhere along the way I said yes to that, I kind of sensed through the whole thing that this was, that what was wrong was what was right, that everything that was wrong with my life was right about it, because it was pushing me into this place that I needed to be and go. And so that, you know, just for having the sense of meaning and purpose through it was everything, with all the difference in the world. It didn't take away the grief. It didn't take away the pain. It didn't take away the confusion. But it did give me a sense of the reason why, and that I was in bigger hands than I ever knew existed. And I could trust that. And I could honor that. And I could actually be invigorated by that idea. So I am thinking now, with, you know, the way the world has changed just since COVID hit the planet, you know, that whole event that's sort of changed all of our daily lives in such a way and our collective lives in such a way. And everybody in the world is connected in this in some way or another on all different sort of ways of imagining what's actually happening, but it's changing so many things and rethinking and reconstructing. And then with the threat of climate change, and this being such a central, finally, in the mainstream consciousness. I mean, I've been following that science since this, you know, mid-century, last century, they've been telling us this, and nobody listened, and I never could believe it. And then when 9/11 happened, I actually thought, well, now they're going to listen. You know, I've been waiting for what's it going to take, and they didn't. So, you know, it's another, what, 20 years from that. And now we're starting to listen, just starting to really listen to the threat that climate change presents. So anyway, with all these changes, there's a lot that we may have to reorganize and possibly suffer in order to get to the next place where our world is more sustainable and where our thinking is more aware, and where the old self that was constructed to live in this reality that created the problem maybe needs to be deconstructed, and there's maybe an ego death involved, which is never fun. Nobody will ever tell you that was fun, you know, when the ego comes undone, because the ego is somehow something that we originally identify with, that we have to disidentify with. And once we understand what the ego is and what it isn't, we can get through that process. But often it takes this kind of uncertainty and shattering in order to get there. So this is a way to just sort of strengthen our hearts and our sense of purpose as we go forward into the changes that are clearly ahead.
Yeah, amazing. That's so powerful. And thank you for sharing parts of your story of that immense shattering on so many levels and so many ways. And when you talk of the efficiency of our earth or spirit, you know, that really is efficient with like.
It really is. You know, it would have taken a long time to deconstruct it, and I wouldn't have done it willingly. So, yeah. Nature has her ways, and we learn to trust them, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. And what's coming to mind is, because I've attended some of your dream symposiums.
Oh, good.
And that will be part of your gift today. Yes. And I'm wondering, you know, in these last 18 months or so, when so much has shattered and so much has changed, I wonder, have you noticed any changes in the types of dreams that either you're having or that people are bringing as well, when this is the reflection of our thoughts, of our subconscious, of our inner depths?
I love that question. That's such a good question. You know, I will mention, yes, I do notice. I mean, that's why we started the Dream Symposium. Basically, Jocelyn Mercado, or Jocelyn Starfeather now, and myself, was because I was, as a dream analyst, I was hearing all these dreams, and I felt like all these dreams are like somebody giving me these treasures that everybody needs to hear, you know, these beautiful messages and stories and myths and images that are so medicinal for our, you know, it's for our understanding. And I didn't know what I'm supposed to do with it. You know, am I supposed to write everybody's dreams down? But they're their private dreams. You know, I can't be telling everybody there. So I talked to Jocelyn. She said, this is what we'll do. She's so brilliant. You know, it's like, we'll do this. And then they come tell their dreams, and we all get the brilliance and the messages. But I will say this, Emer, I have noticed in the last few years that I have more of these dreams. I know I've had them earlier in life, but I've had more of these dreams. And see if you're, you know, if any of you, when you scan your dreaming sort of library or history, if you have these dreams that are in this dark, 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 dark place, where there's, you know, the Kogi, this tribe in central, I think, Colombia, raised the shaman for the tribe in the dark for the first 9 years of life. They never see the light. They're always in this cave in the dark and never see the light. And there, you know, then they gestate and grow and develop in their senses, the other senses, besides just, you know, what sight distracts us from some of these deeper senses. So I often have these dreams that are like that, that it feel like I'm in this dark, 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 dark space, but my senses are alive and I'm very aware. And I will say one of the dreams that I had in that dark space was the one that that said preserving what the witches knew. I came out of that space and the only words I had were preserving what the witches knew. And I knew that was like what was happening. And it was also a mandate. And what am I supposed to do with this? And how do I think about this? And within a month, I got your invitation. That's how we met, was you invited me to speak at your first symposium or your first summit.
Last year. The witch wound, yeah. And it was just like, you have to be here. When I saw your title, I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
The witches knew. Amazing. Right.
Yeah. And so listen to those dreams. I wish I could tell you. I mean, it could be a whole thing I do sometime to tell you of the dreams that have come out of that dark place. They're the most essential, the deepest dreams. So yes, in that sense, I feel like this call to the spirit of the depths has changed something about the experience of my dreaming and my awareness of those spaces and what comes out of those spaces. So
interesting, because when this summit, it's aligned with winter solstice.
Mm-hmm.
And Newgrange in Ireland's ancient East, one of our speakers talks about how in ancient times, so 5,000 plus years ago, it was a place of ritual where people would go into the darkness of this womb tomb. It is womb shaped. It's also like cross shaped, like the Celtic wheel, mm-hmm. and would spend 3 days and three nights in there in the darkness.
Oh gee.
So when you talk of the depths, the spirit of the depths, the darkness, and also the Kogi experience of the 9 years,
mm-hmm.
so it feels very significant of why we can embrace the darkness. It's not a bad, it doesn't mean badness, does it? It's the, you know, the yin and the yang, the dark and the light. There's something that feels very significant in there.
Yeah, and I would say the darkness is who we are. You know, we think of it as something other, something that we step into that isn't us, but it's at the core of every atom in our being is this space that I wonder if there's air in there. We'll have to ask Stokely.
Oscar Grandson.
Stokely, is there air in there? He could probably tell me.
We bring him on next. Guest appearance.
Yeah.
Wee Toby.
The future's in good hands, let's just say that.
Yeah, that's great to know. You know. Yeah, so it's wonderful in one way to hear of what we can pay attention to in our dreams in the darkest times, the witching hour of night, as it's sometimes called, and also during the day as well. So for, you know, this is about witches rising up and returning to our power.
Mm-hmm.
In what way then is all that you share connected to the witches and maybe in preserving what they knew as well?
Well, absolutely. You know, I feel like the witches, the reason they're scary is because they're connected to these dark places. They're connected to the mysteries And mystery has become something that we relegate to, I don't know, God will take care of it, we don't have to know, kind of thing. You know, like it's almost we externalize mystery, you know, like we can't know about that. But actually, the witches are in the mystery, and they savor the mystery, and they work with mystery in that kind of way. And that's why people are scared of them, because people are scared of the powers of these places of darkness and mystery that the witches absolutely understood and understand. And their medicinal sort of what they cook up comes out of their awareness of that. And so I feel like it has everything to do with what the witches knew. And also the fear that is tragically evoked by that, why they had to be burned and extinguished, and because there's so much fear around entering this state of lack of control, lack of ego domination, lack of greed, power, authority, none of that lives in those places. So the witches were definitely in touch with this dimension of our being, and brought their wisdom from those places. They would consult with the powers that aren't seen with the physical eyes, but that are known at a cellular level. So, and they were in communication with that, and understand that that's the deepest sort of power that is in us, is that nature. Yeah. So
there's so much magic in that mystery.
absolutely right. So I had a few weeks, it was about the end of summer and the beginning of fall this year, it was a few weeks in there, maybe August or something, where I was I'm trying to find the words to describe it, but I was sort of guided not to think, just don't think. Every time I'd start spinning on a thought, it would be just like something would come up against it, and it's like, don't think, stop thinking. And I just kind of went with it. It happened to be a time when I didn't have a lot of thinking I had to do, which I normally do, and I am a thinking type. It's interesting, Emer, I went a couple of years ago, I was blessed to be able to go into a crop circle in the UK, in England, outside of Glastonbury, outside of Devizes. And the message that I got from the crop circle is don't think. It's like I went in there and I started thinking, and the message was don't think. It's like, get underneath all thoughts, stop it, stop thinking. And so this summer I thought, well, that's what the crop circle was trying to teach me. You know, when I just all of a sudden was coming up against this guidance to stop thinking. But it's so interesting, because when I kind of went with it and allowed myself to be in the depths of that kind of silence, and not even deconstructing thought, just not having thought in the ways that I could, you know, you still have your life to live. When I was started to move out of it and felt the permission to think again, all of a sudden I had like laser focus insights into so many things. It was like coming out of that place, all of a sudden it was like things were so clear, the insights were so strong and powerful. And I think that's what the witches knew. You know, I think that's kind of what they knew, how to go to those places and bring out the insight, the medicine of those places. And I was starting to experience it. I was just like writing down, I have pages and pages of things on different subjects. It's like a subject that was of interest to me, all of a sudden this download would come. And I thought it was because I allowed myself to be in that place of silence. And one of my teachers, Emer, was Buckminster Fuller. I knew him earlier in life. He was a friend of my father's. He went into a period of silence when he decided that he just was not meant to succeed in the world the way it was all set up. It was the setup itself was a disaster, he decided. And so he decided to go 2 years without using any words in complete silence because he thought words were the problem. And I've had a dream like that recently where it was something with the United States and it was the wording of something that made the whole problem in the United States. It was because of the words. And so words are very powerful. So if we stop them, if we stop thinking and go beneath them, so Bucky did. He went 2 years just unthinking, as he said, everything he'd been taught to think, so that when he came out of that silence, he could start thinking for himself. And I think there is a way that we can engage that pattern. We may not do something as dramatic as not speaking for 2 years, which his blessed wife conducted all of his affairs while he did this. She supported, you know, absolutely his, you know, his deep intention. And then he came out and wrote tons of books and lectured all over the world. And so, you know, but it was out of that sort of place of silence that he brought this. And Einstein said the same thing. He said, I can think of something 99 times. And if I stop thinking, that's when the insight comes. That's when all of his major revelations occurred, was out of the silence, not out of some kind of rational linear thought. So I think that's what we can do, you know, and that's how we can connect with our witchy selves, is to allow ourselves to go into that place of silence. Right. And after my whole deconstruction process in my life that I was describing a little bit of, I moved to the mountain and lived alone on a mountain in the middle of the wilderness in North Carolina, these mountains of North Carolina. I moved out of Los Angeles into the mountains and lived alone for 8 years. And, you know, I conducted retreats, like every third month I had a retreat, but other than that, I was pretty much in utter silence there. And that was the healing time for me. It was like the way to just deconstruct, live with that, the deconstructed life and live into it and let nature sort of heal and inform me in you know, living out there. So, you know, there are ways that we can do this. We don't have to have the dramatic sort of like moves like that. You don't have to live on a mountain for 8 years, but there are ways that we can intend to allow for that kind of wisdom to enter. So.
So powerful, just the power of that. And it's like the deep darkness of the womb of creation, you know, that when we can allow ourselves to fall back into that and be held by that.
Right. Yeah, I love that you bring in the womb image, because certainly we're not thinking in there, we're just experiencing. Yeah. And developing, right?
Yeah. And then when you talk about words being so powerful, they do cast spells, don't they?
Yes, they do. Yes, we have to be so careful with our words. Yeah. And with the words even that we allow ourselves to think.
Yes. Yeah. And it's probably one of the greatest challenges, isn't it? When you're told not to think, all you want to do is think.
Right, exactly. Let me think about that.
So, yeah, that's
guidance not to think.
Amazing. On that note, you know, going into the silence or creating opportunities for that silence to be with ourselves, and then not thinking or getting below the thinking. Are there any other ways that people can be feel supported to really courageously fall in order to rise in this way?
You know, one thing that has been that I've a concept that I, or an idea, a small ritual that I have used for a few years that I really recommend, is finding a sit spot in nature and going to this place. And those who speak of it, John Young, I guess, is one of the ones who spoke of it. You find a place that is your little temple, that is near your home, that puts you in nature. And you may be in a very urban neighborhood, but if you find a little spot that where you're facing a tree, where you're able to watch the birds or feel the wind or the clouds as they shift and change or whatever. And if you go to that spot, and it should be, as they say, near your home, so you don't have to like get in the car and drive, you know, take time that you probably don't have to get there, but find your little spot in nature that you connect to. And if you can, go to that spot for like 10 minutes every day and just be there. Drop your thoughts if you can, and let the wind, let the little bugs and butterflies and birds and, you know, the way the grass sort of blows and sometimes has messages in it, or, you know, just let yourself be there and give yourself that sort of ritual of stopping and of being like immersed in nature. You can use all the imagination you want, even if you're in an urban environment, that you, here you are on your mountaintop, your particular temple. And create that. So I would say if there are ways to be in nature, because that's where I think the real powers are, and that's where we connect to what we're made of. We're made of all that stuff, you know, that the earth is made of. And those are our ancestors that are in the dirt, in the leaves, in the, you know, that's the ancestral womb of creation right there. So that's one way. Just find a place that you can go to, make it your spot, and then find your way there and find the silence. And it doesn't have to be, you know, om meditation. It can be just quiet, just not thinking. Or if you have to think on something, think on it there. Think of it in your temple. You know, it's not like, thought, there's something wrong with thought if thought is what needs to happen, but give yourself the idea that you can do that. So
I love that, and noticing the feeling, the air and the wind and hearing the sounds, it's immensely calming, isn't it? And presencing.
Yes, and it can be your own little private vision quest. You know, a vision quest doesn't have to be 4 days in the, you know, in the darkness. It can be 10 minutes a day. You know, you can make it that kind of event for yourself. So, yeah.
I love that. Which is what, where the witches would have hung out as well.
In the Absolutely.
Forests, on the earth.
Right.
Probably barefoot, on walking upon the land of their ancestors.
Right. Yes.
Gorgeous. Well, is there anything else you'd like to share?
You know, I'm going to, I brought with me this little, I printed out this little thing. I'm going to read it to you. This I read after I'd been sort of working with all these things that I've been talking about today. So interesting. There's a couple, their names are Clark Strand and Perdita Finn, and they together wrote a book called The Way of the Rose. And they tell the story of this lady who began to appear to Clark and talk to him. And they call her the lady. They have come to feel and understand that she's likely Mary, mother of Jesus, Mary, who has been appearing all over the world for centuries, you know, talking to people, trying to help us with she. And she often is warning of wars to come, you know, even the children in Fatima and, you know, all the ones. So she, you know, she started talking to Clark and telling of things to come. And now they had some original, that book is just wonderful in terms of reading their story. But now they have a website or Facebook group that they share. And every month on the 16th of the month, she delivers a message, because it was on the 16th I think it was in 2011 on the 16th of one of the months, October, that she appeared for the first time. So now on the 16th of the month, she comes. So listen to this one. This is the one that she delivered on September 16th of this year. And I had already been thinking on all these things. Listen. I have asked you to stand ready, but ready for what? There will be no revolution, no ascension, no transformation. There will be no change in your kind that you can discern or understand. There will only be a great fall that does not destroy you. Just as when you lose your footing in a dream and plummet into the abyss, but do not hit bottom, you will wake to the world you knew before. That world before is a world you no longer remember. And it has been a long time since you walked its paths and lived beneath its sun. But that world is waiting for you. It has not changed. It has never forsaken you nor forgotten you, but awaits for your return. There will be destruction, deconstruction, and great dismay, but there will be no end. Only the beginning that you experience when waking from a nightmare to the sunrise and the blessing of a new day. My days are very, very long. And just because you have reached the end of one of them doesn't mean there are not many more to come. My womb is deep. It gives birth to endless time and infinite possibility. When the moment comes, I will wake you with a kiss.
Wow.
So there you go, right? What else is there to say? I just love this, you know, just kind of keep it around. It's like, okay, I got this. We got this.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And it's like, it's the original world. I did a shamanic journey recently, and it took me back to the spirits that lived here long before life was here on Earth, long before there were even any kind of life on Earth. There were spirits here. They were already dwelling here. They're still here. They're waiting for us to reconnect and remember. They're part of us. So, you know, that. So it's a present reality, and it's waiting for our return to just the depths of what we can know from that place.
Oof. So powerful, the spirit of the depths.
Yes.
Is waiting for us all to remember.
Right.
Reconnect. That's so powerful. Wow, thank you so much, Tarja. Would you like to say anything about the Dream Symposium? I know we mentioned it earlier as well.
Yes, I mean, I'm sure you'll be giving the link to it, but everyone's invited. It is free. We do it once a month. It's always on a Friday. It's always at 1 o'clock Eastern time. And the dates for that are on my website and Jocelyn Starfeather's website. Just look under Dream Symposium. And if you register on the Dream Symposium page, you'll get the notices of when the next ones are coming and the link and the Zoom link and so forth. But come, and it's like all of this is happening in the dreaming, all of this sort of depth of connection is happening in the dreaming. And so when we get and listen to the collective aspect of the dreams, now we don't do private and analytic work for people privately within the Dream Symposium. Certainly that would be a private matter, but we listen to the messages that come through the dreams that seem to be for the collective, for the village, you know, as Indigenous people still do today, listen every day to the dreams of the people in the village. And that's how they know how to think and how to conduct their affairs. And so, but it's an immersion in the dreaming mind and in the collective dreaming mind and a place to tell your own dreams, which I think they want to be witnessed. They want to be voiced. So But if you don't have a dream to share, certainly come. You know, there's only a few we can listen to every time. So come and just immerse yourself in the just the wonder of the dreaming world, and this dimension of our being that is ever active and speaking.
Love that. I love that. And when you're saying come, come, it's like the witches are calling. Come to the Dream Symposium. And you also get to immerse yourself in your wisdom and Jocelyn Starfeather's wisdom, who's also speaking in this summit as well. So
yeah. Oh yeah, Jocelyn's so wonderful. So,
yeah.
Yes.
Sure is. So it's the dream team and the Dream Symposium.
Yes. So everyone's invited. You're so welcome. And we offer it with all our hearts. So
absolutely wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Tarya. I really enjoyed this. It's flown by.
Yes, it has.
Links to how people can connect with you and how they can join the Dream Symposium as well below this video. And yeah.
Well, thank you, Emer. Thank you so much for the invitation. And what a deep, rich pleasure it is to connect with you and to be a part of this beautiful event that you're having now. So I so appreciate that you're doing this.
Thank you so much. And thank you for sharing your immense, deep wisdom.
Really
wonderful.
Thank you.
And to everyone watching, we will see you again soon.
Yeah, love and blessings to all of you.
Yes, together, witches, we rise up and return to our power.
Let's do it. We're doing it.
Yeah. Now is the hour.
Witches, we are rising, rising, rising. Witches, we are rising in the 21st century.
Thank you for inviting your witch out to play today.